Do you know what, Jen? I don't think I've ever looked better in my life. I think I'm at the peak of my physical prowess.
I think you are.
At the moment. And yeah. I would love to share that with people. I'd love people to be able to see me in the flesh.
It's selfish to keep this.
It is. This amount of radiance needs to be shared. So I thought what I would do is invite people along to see me in real life.
To be in the same room at the Museum of Comedy.
At the Museum of Comedy, because comedy is what I do most of the time.
And you belong in a museum.
No.
It was, how rude.
My self-esteem had climbed and now it's back down on the floor. But no, I love the Museum of Comedy and I'm going to go there and I'm going to take my raw magnetism with me on Wednesday the 24th of April.
Can I come too?
You can. Just try not to sort of detract from my glow, you know.
Okay.
We are going to have the magnificent Jenny Ryan, a magnificent guest.
Ooh.
TBA. Wednesday the 24th of April. Put it in your diaries. Bring your sunglasses because I am shining.
Yeah, get your tickets now. The link is in our social media or from the Museum of Comedy website.
Oh, please do come. Jen's all right as well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's your name?
Jenny Ryan.
Correct. What's my name?
Lucy Porter.
Correct. What are we doing?
We're making a podcast all about quizzing.
Correct. What's it called?
Fingers on Buzzers.
Correct. Hello and welcome to another episode of
Fingers on Buzzers.
Oh, it's like Paul Hardcastle's in the room with me. It really is.
19.
My age at the time of recording, of course. So we've got a treat yet again for you. A woman today who is, I mean, she's an author, she's a podcaster, she's an actor, she's a poet. She's got more strings to her bow than Yehudi Menuhin or a more contemporary violin, Mantovani. No, I really don't know any
Vanessa
contemporary.
May.
Reasonably contemporary. I mean, there must be a more current violinist, surely. Nicoletta Benedetti.
Okay.
I don't know. There's someone. But yes, she's not a violinist, but that's about all she doesn't do. It's the brilliant Samantha Baines, who will be talking to us.
What a polymath.
So we'll be hearing from the brilliant Samantha Baines, and we have a wonderful listener quiz, which has been sent in by James Ennis.
Already looking forward to it.
I know, so much to get on with, so let's do it right now. And so here we are with a woman of so many talents. I cannot even begin to list them. I mean, I did, Samantha, before you arrived. I just listed some of them. But I mean, you know, author,
can
actor.
You play the violin? That's what I want to know.
I said you had so many strings to your bow. And if you can also play the violin, that would be amazing.
I did level one of the violin when I was at school. And my family complained, so then I stopped.
But technically you're a violinist, so we have a violinist, an author, an actor, a comedian, a poet, and someone who I always think of as a great purveyor of facts, because having seen your Edinburgh show, now you taught me all about women in space, Samantha.
Oh, you're welcome. I do love a fact. It's like I tried to combine facts and funnies in my stand-up. And yeah, I just love finding out interesting nuggets of information that unfortunately don't come up in quizzes as often as you'd want them to.
This is the problem, isn't it? The really interesting stuff. Kind of, you know, you kind of go, oh, if they ask me about women in space, you know, if you were on Mastermind, would that be your specialist subject? What would you go for?
I don't know if it would be, because there's been quite a few women in space now, and they'd probably ask you about all of their lives rather than them being in actual space. So I feel like I don't know enough. Although, you know, you like cram before you go on. That would be quite a fun subject to cram. So maybe something to do with, I don't know, tampons in space. Is that too specific?
maybe not for the celebrity series.
Okay, yeah, you're allowed to get. I also really like Harry Potter, not the author, but the stories and the films. But loads of people do that now, don't they? Harry Potter.
Yeah, I think that's
It's an ever expanding topic as well now. So yeah, I think I'd avoid that.
Could tampons in space.
Yeah, tampons or TV programs and films I've been in, and only the episode I've been in, so that I can answer questions on that.
Well, I've got two follow-up questions there. Firstly, tampons in space. Our listeners might be going, what the heck are they talking about? So can you enlighten us there?
I just like tampons and space. No, there is that one of the first, or the first American woman in space, Sally Ride. She went to space for 7 days, and the story goes, people have tried to disprove this, but then other people have said it's true. So there's a bit of a gray area around whether this actually happened. Something like this definitely happened. But the engineers at NASA, before she went to space for a week, said, how many tampons do you need? Is 100 enough for 7 days?
I mean, that's a heavy flow.
Yeah. In my stand-up, I obviously, you know, act out sucking up tampons with my vagina and then shooting them out as a way to use them up. There's lots of different, or like them floating and her holding onto them like the old man in Up with the balloons. There's lots of different options, but yeah.
Wow.
And then the second follow-up question, obviously, is we have trailed you as an actor and you have been in some amazing stuff. So if we were to quiz you on things that you've been in, what have been the most fun things that you have done?
Oh, the fun thing. The fun things are normally not the big things, unfortunately. Mm. Although I think, you know, I did Magic Mike Live, which is directed by Channing Tatum, and that was quite fun.
And Channing did come in and he stuck his hand in, didn't he?
Yeah, so I didn't stick his hand in me, unfortunately.
No.
Which is a question that I get asked a lot. Did you sleep with Channing Tatum? And to those people, I would just like to say thank you for assuming that I could sleep with Channing Tatum. I love you so much. No, I didn't sleep with him. Exclusive. Whoa. But yeah, he did. I worked with him on the script because it was already a show in Vegas. So I worked with him on the script in LA, as you do when I was getting divorced, to make it into the London show. And then, yeah, he came over to London and directed us, you know, on stage and stuff. So that was pretty fun. And then The Crown was very fun. But that was series one. So it wasn't as huge as it is now, but it was still like a really big production. And I think I'd just come off doing, I mean, no offense to Dane Baptiste, it was a lovely show, but I did Dane Baptiste BBC Three show, which was a slightly smaller budget than Netflix The Crown. I'm just, you know, possibly, I don't know the numbers. But then going on to like a huge thing like The Crown, where like I had my own runner. And for people who don't know, a runner is like basically a person who's meant to run around to give you things, like do errands for you. And I just felt terrible because I was like, no, I can get my own coffee from the coffee, you know, little stand that they have. That's totally fine. And I remember them saying to me, I literally have nothing to do if you don't ask me to do things.
Yes.
So then I became a real diva. And I was like, well, just because you need things to do. How about I have a chocolate-coated man in my trailer? No, I didn't ask for that.
Chocolate-coated Channing Tatum. Yeah, because I mean, I used to be a runner, and actually you sort of, you want someone who's nice but demanding enough that you can then justify going off and going, oh God, Ms. Baines has asked me for a bowl of M&Ms with all the blue ones taken out or whatever. So yeah, you get a bit of time away. And so, I mean, and now, I suppose we now know you as an author.
I know.
Author and activist, is that a fun job title to have?
It's very serious, isn't it? You know, coming from, because I trained as an actress and then I was in a sketch group and then I started stand-up comedy, and I've actually stopped doing live stand-up now because, you know, I'm deaf in one ear and it's a really overwhelming sound environment with my hearing aid and all of that. And I do like being funny, but I guess at the moment I'm trying to do it through other avenues. And I don't like traveling on my own. I'm very lazy. So, but coming from kind of acting and comedy, yeah, author and activist is like properly, it's very like Radio 4, the Today program, isn't it?
We're speaking to author and activist Samantha Baines about her authoring and activism in Minim.
And no shade on that program. Like, I'm very happy to be on. But yeah, it definitely feels like I've got to put my serious face on and not make any silly jokes about chocolate covered men in my trailer.
Yeah, not to say that you haven't slept with Channing Tatum, because most of the Radio 4 audience wouldn't know who that is for a start.
No.
I understand that that is part of Greta Thunberg's rider.
Not sleeping with Channing Tatum or a chocolate covered.
Just chocolate covered.
Yeah. Humans. Yeah.
Human. Yeah.
I mean, I'm bisexual, so I'm very happy for it to be a chocolate covered woman or non-binary person. You know,
it's a sustainable way of serving chocolate.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, it's difficult to wash off. So you need to either lick or sweat it off.
Yeah.
The things we learn on this podcast, it never ceases to amaze me. So, so you've been writing amazing books, firstly for children. So Harriet versus the Galaxy, which my children absolutely loved.
Oh, yay.
And the Night the Moon Went Out. And now you have, in your sort of activist slash author capacity, you have a new book coming out.
Yes, it's called Living with Hearing Loss and Deafness, A Guide to Owning It and Loving It.
Oh, I love that.
And the longest title of all time, just so that when I go on and do interviews about it, I have to remember all the words in order. So it's basically the book I originally wanted to write. Before I thought I'd be like an author, I thought I had one book in me and I thought this was the book. And it's actually taken this long. It's taken the two children's books to sort of get here, because at the time everyone was like, oh, hearing loss and deafness, so niche. And even though my children's books have deaf protagonists, there's still, you know, a whole story of space and magic to be getting on with. And this is it's nonfiction. So it's me interviewing lots of brilliant deaf people and representatives from like deaf charities and audiologists, and just getting lots of information and facts, which, you know, I love, and putting them together. And then also just putting some, you know, actual stories from my life and other people's lives. Because I feel like when I got my hearing aid and when I was told I had hearing loss, I was 30. So it was just over 5 years ago. And I looked for a book to kind of explain it to me, but in a conversational way, because I love facts, but I don't always understand them straight away. I have to research them. And there was lots of amazing factual books out there, but they would definitely take a bit of research. And I sort of just wanted to like talk to someone almost about my experience. So hopefully that's what this book is. So it's very silly in places, as am I. But there are also, yeah, facts and like useful practical information if you were getting your first hearing aid, or you just discovered that you were had hearing loss or were deaf. Or becoming deaf, or even if a family member, it would help.
What is lovely about you as well is that you do have a very warm conversational style, as evidenced in your podcast, The Divorce Social.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, I like to talk to people about their divorces and mine.
And what have been your favourite interviews in the course of doing that podcast, would you say?
Oh, it's been a bit of a journey with The Divorce Social, because I set it up during lockdown in my spare room. And really, it was an excuse to make people talk to me about their divorces, because I wanted to check that mine was normal, in inverted commas. There's no normal divorce, but you know, or like other people's experiences. And having a podcast is a really good way to make people talk to you, top tip, and make friends. So I started off doing that, but yeah, I've learned something from every single person I've interviewed, and it's been so interesting. I think I interviewed Karen Hauer from Strictly Come Dancing, who has been in the latest series with Jade, who's a comedian that we all know. So that was really fun, because I didn't know her at all before I interviewed her. And I think she'd actually heard the podcast before, and that's how we got chatting. And it was really nice. She spoke really eloquently, and she has this way of like creating these amazing metaphors for life. And she talked about, you know, her divorce and like grief and stuff being like a tumor clinging on your back. And like, I was like, wow, that's such an amazing way of describing life and this experience. So it was lovely to talk to her. And then Sarah Millican was who we kicked it all off with, because she is, you know, the godmother of divorce amongst comedians. I don't know if you know this, but yes. Female comedians have been divorced before, shock, and we're too funny for some people, and even some people that we marry. And so Sarah's like been this font of wisdom for so many people. So she was the first person I turned to. But then equally, you know, incredible people like Annie Kazimura, who lives... She was living in the Congo, and she was in an abusive marriage. And at the time, it was illegal for her to book a flight out of the country without her husband's permission. So she literally couldn't escape him, like under the law. And just about her incredible journey. And she moved to South Africa, and now she's living in Canada. And she got asylum in Canada with her and her family. And she's now kind of an activist and works to help other women, which is incredible. So, yeah, just a real varied range of stories. And I've got a new series coming up, which is I'm speaking to some very exciting people.
Ooh.
Famous people in America, like big time.
Check who's recently got divorced in America.
Yeah, exactly.
See if we can guess.
So it's definitely been a journey, but it's amazing. And people share so much. It's so lovely. They're very honest, which is I feel very privileged.
Well, there is that sort of impulse, isn't it, that if you've been through a lot of crap, you want to help other people who might be able to benefit from your experience, which is lovely, and that you've set up the podcast to allow people to do that. And I guess also with, you know, your role now as a kind of ambassador, what's your sort of official connection to sort of deaf activism and ambassadorship?
So I have a hearing aid. I'm deaf, and I have it's worse in one ear, which is the ear I wear hearing aid in. And I am the celebrity ambassador. Who do I think I am calling myself a celebrity? I'm the celebrity ambassador for RNID, which is the Royal National Institute for Deaf People. And so I get involved with a lot of their campaigns, particularly the Subtitle It campaign, which is about pushing for subtitles in the cinemas and also on video on demand services. So they did a big campaign with the government and stuff, and then we've also talked about tinnitus at the House of Commons and all sorts. So yeah, I just get involved with their campaigns whenever I can, and whenever I can lend a helping hand, basically.
And we're quite excited, obviously, on this podcast. Our focus is quizzing, and if I'm completely honest, when we did our last live show at King's Place, and we had a sign language interpreter, and it, you know, we had a BSL interpreter, and it's just, you know, it's so easy. It's such a great thing to have alongside what you're doing, because, you know, Jenny will be able to enlighten us, I think, about how, you know, the kind of accessibility of quizzing is something, I'll be honest, I'd never really thought about until we started doing this podcast, and we've talked about it in various ways, haven't we?
Absolutely. There are so many ways that we can be more inclusive. I mean, I was at an event a couple of weeks ago, and that we have all the fans lined up waiting for selfies and everything. And one of the fans who wanted to speak to me was a deaf man. And he was asking me, you know, are there any plans to make it possible for me to appear on The Chase? You know, I would love to do it. And thinking about, actually, there's a whole stumbling block here with our format, but there are so many other ways we can come up with accessible formats. Another, I suppose quizzing being such a broad church, there is a way in for everybody, but also being aware of that, because it's just not something that, you know, hearing people think of enough. And it made me feel really bad. But yeah, I think I'd be interested to find out what the quizzing ways of the deaf community are.
Yes, well, unfortunately, we hadn't spoken sooner, because there's not a chapter in the book about quizzing, and there should be. But don't worry, as a deaf community, we don't blame you for The Chase not being accessible. But actually, it's quite an accessible show, because the questions are written down and there's different options that the person can read. So it would only be the interactions, and all you need is just a BSL interpreter to be there. So I feel like that's a pretty straightforward one. Some of them would be harder, you know, like, you know, on some of my favorite quizzes, they have like a music round where you have to, obviously that's gonna not be accessible to a deaf person, but yeah, I feel like The Chase could be, let's make it happen. I'm gonna contact the producers and be like, oi.
A particularly speedy interpreter for the final chase though.
Yes, although it could just be written down, and you know, the quick fire.
Yeah.
It could, you know, there could be a way of working that out where the questions could appear on a screen, because obviously they know, you know, the producers and everyone know the questions in advance.
And the show is edited. So, you know, I mean, actually, in terms of for the contestants, there would be, I'm trying to think, God, it's interesting, isn't it? The logistics of it, because obviously in terms of the viewing audience, it's, you know, that's kind of easy. But in terms of, yeah, as a contestant, whether, you know, if your BSL interpreter can write, look, this well, isn't going is in that? The podcast, because I'm just trying to sort of think.
Well, I think if the BSL if the time was only counted from when the BSL interpreter had finished translating the question, so the thinking time was the same.
Mm. Which would be easier in individual shows. So, for example, Mastermind.
Yeah.
So an individual show would be easier. A team show, I guess, would be a little bit harder.
Yeah. I think it's the team aspect, not knowing until the time how many people are going to be in your team and buzzing in, and, you know, that kind of communication between you and your team members as much as anything.
Well, if you had an all deaf team, and then if the buzzers vibrated as well. I'm like, yes. No, we can make this happen.
Yes. Well, I mean, eggheads, certainly.
Yeah.
I can see, definitely. Eggheads would be a great way to start. I mean, Mastermind, certainly. I could see that being kind of doable. But yeah, we do just need to think a bit more, don't we? I mean, what I found interesting recently was, I don't know if you saw Jamie McDonald, the blind comedian from Scotland, was on Have I Got News For You?
Mm-hmm. And they had a picture around.
Yes. And what was really quite refreshing was that it was the viewers who were saying, hang on a minute, you know, this is kind of not acceptable. And I mean, you know, Jamie very graciously was like, well, I knew what I signed up for when I was doing the show, and, you know, I didn't feel that I was disadvantaged. And I mean, obviously that's a panel show, not a quiz show, which is a very sort of different thing. It's all just for laughs and there's no sort of points or money involved. But you know, it's just so great that we are now having those conversations, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's taken too long. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, one of the things I write about in the book, and also, you know, a lot of people say, if you go online, there's loads of brilliant activists in the deaf community, like doing so much work all the time, and that's like their full-time job, and they're journalists, and if we created everything in the first place to be accessible,
exactly, build
and none of this would be a problem
in.
Like, and we've created our own issues as an ableist society.
Mm-hmm, totally. And if you just, because actually when you're creating a quiz, so, you know, you think about so many things, and just building accessibility into that from day one, you know, like, that is absolutely what should happen all the time now, and hopefully will. But it, as you say, it is frustrating that it's taken.
Yeah. I have to say, if we can make it possible for a pretend fox to take part on the chase, then we can.
That happened.
Everything. Yeah.
Wow, I didn't see that episode.
Yeah, Basil Brush was a contestant. He's been on twice.
Oh, wow.
They actually created an extra bit of set for him. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I feel like it's almost slightly offensive that a puppet went on first before a deaf person, but sure, he's famous. I get it. My dog's chewing something.
I know, and do you know, my cat was just, I saw the cat. Yeah, my cat was just getting up on my... I'm just going to let the cat out, actually, because she's getting up on my shoulders. Sorry, do excuse me. Oh, hello, Custard.
Custard.
Custard's going to sit on my lap. That's what we've decided.
We've been joined for the last part of this interview by Samantha's gorgeous dog, Custard.
Oh, my heart.
Such an amazing dog. So now... I mean, we want to talk to you more about your love of facts. Does that lead into being a keen quizzer?
Well, I want it to be more of that, because I feel like I've got so many great facts in me ready to seep out into quizzing. Whenever I got quite into pub quizzes, and I used to go to kind of local ones, and then they stopped, and now there's a new local one near me, so I'm going to go to that like in the next month. But there's always, I feel like there's always very stereotypical pub quiz rounds that don't allow for my facts. You know, there's rarely like a space round is specifically what I'd like, or, you know, a tampon round. There's none of these. It's always like, I'm terrible at geography, like honestly, so bad. My mum tells me off all the time about it. So, and that's always around. And then there's always like general knowledge, which is things that aren't general knowledge. They're very obscure, but not obscure enough for me to know them.
Amanda, our producer, did prime us with the fact that you had said that, you know, geography was your worst nightmare. And so Jenny and I thought, actually, part of our function on this podcast is really to sort of help people with their quizzing ability. So this seems like an ideal opportunity to talk a little bit about if geography terrifies you. And I know it does for a lot of people.
Yeah.
There are things you can do, Samantha.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Okay.
Yeah, would you say it's a visualization thing? Is it or just a no sense of direction thing? Or do you just not care?
I think it's... Okay, it's like I used to live in central London and I know a lot of the places in central London, but I know them from getting out of the tube station at that place. And then I know like the shops nearby, but I don't know how they connect to each other. And that is the same with the world. Mm. So I've been to a lot of incredible places, but I can't tell you where they are.
That is a very common thing. I get a bit of that as well. I think London does ruin a lot of us in terms of seeing how the bits connect together.
And also I have no sense of direction. I don't drive. So.
Well, try and make it a bit more fun visual. Put up a map in your bathroom where you can see it from the toilet.
Okay.
And you can just keep glancing at it. If it's a world map, a map of Britain, a map of London, you start to see where things are in relation to one another. And you know, you might spend a little bit of time in there. You never know. Just things build up.
I love a good poo.
I think if there's anything that you need to keep coming back to, just a little bit of revision on a daily basis, back of the toilet door is a prime candidate because it's just giving you a little bit of a visual cue. But I mean, it might mean you need to go to the loo during the middle of the pub quiz because it's sort of a conditioning thing.
Unless you're opening your bowels, you cannot tell where Lithuania is.
Well, I always I have anxiety as well, and I do always like to know where the nearest toilet is. I have a bit of a weeing thing, and also, you know, as a deaf person, when I'm out in a really loud environment like a pub can be, a toilet is quite often a haven. Mm-hmm. For so many reasons, but also because it's normally slightly quieter than the outside. So I like this idea of making my haven also
your safe space
school.
It's a learning environment as well, but not, yeah. It's not forcing you to learn. It's kind of a passive learning. So even if you just go, oh, I didn't realize how far north Coventry was.
The problem
nobody
is
nobody really cares where Coventry is, really.
Oh, I do. My mum was from there, so that's one of the few ones that I know about. But
it's
the problem
up
is
from London, right?
It's up from London.
There you go.
Yeah. There we go. It's a start.
You see, you're better than you thought you were. But the problem with the toilet now is I know a lot of people take their phone to the toilet.
Yeah.
And I'm here to say don't do that for any number of reasons, hygienic, but also knowledge. Because, you know, it used to be you'd sit on the loo and go, oh, God, you know, this is taking a bit longer than I thought. I'll read the back of a shampoo bottle or yes. I'll, you know, have a think. And actually that time is time you can be revising. So this is to you, Samantha, and to all our listeners.
Okay.
Leave your phone
outside.
I like
the idea that you poo in your shower as well, where the shampoo bottles are really close by.
Got long
arms.
Much
like a French person. They poo in the shower and poke it down with their toes. That's what I've heard.
Oh, wow.
That's what I've heard. It's what my husband tells me.
That's involved.
That's his excuse anyway.
But I would say our top tips God knows what he does in the bathroom. I like to just ignore any, you know, I don't like to know. Our top tips are revise on the toilet.
Okay.
But also, I think exactly what Jenny was saying, like if you're a visual person, do visualization. For me, it's lists as well, like lists of American state capitals, world capitals. You know, geography is actually much more manageable than you think because the range of things they ask about in geography in quizzes is actually quite narrow, isn't it?
In a pub quiz, definitely. So you want to start with your national capitals, really.
Yeah.
And yeah, US state capitals, former names of countries is quite a good one as well. So, but for learning those kind of things, you can gamify it. So I'd say look at something like Sporkle, where you can pick a topic that you're quite weak on and you can keep playing the same game, even if you play it once a week, and try and improve your score every week. You'll find things kind of stack up, and you've got a little bit more knowledge every time. But I mean, if you're not into that, if you're not interested in geography, I think if you're not interested in any topic, it is a bit of a losing battle to try and
if you're not interested in any topic, then your life's going to be hard. You've got to be interested in something. Yeah. No, but I like the idea of lists, actually, because quite often when it comes to geography, it's all spaced out on a map. Mm. And actually, being a wordy person, I love a list. Yes. So I feel like that might be more accessible, like a list of capital cities.
List on the back of the bathroom door. There you go.
Yeah. Oh my God, I love it. Yeah. I did actually, talking of poo though, I did actually, this is the sort of obscure knowledge I have. I did actually go to a lecture on primate poo, and that was incredibly interesting. So, I mean, I can't do geography, but I could, you know, I went on safari recently, I know, showing off, and I found out that leopard poo is, you know, how it looks is quite pellety compared to other, and I had a whole chat with the game driver about different animals poo, and that's one of the ways that he tries to track all the animals. And then me and my sister were like trying to create a like a dictionary of poo for the animals that we were checking out on safari. So we started taking pictures of the poo, and then we were like, we're gonna get home and be scrolling through our phone showing people pictures of our holiday, and then just be like, oh, and then it'll just be 20 pictures of different poos.
Shall I do the two of you a quick quiz about poo?
Please. Yes.
Please. Okay, this is not necessarily about animals you might have seen on safari, but this is just about general animal poo. Okay.
Okay. I love it.
So no,
I just need to express that my eyes are wide and lit up for anyone listening, because I'm genuinely excited about this stuff.
Okay. So I'm going to give you descriptions of some animal feces, and you have to tell me which animal might leave these clues behind. Okay. This is an animal that we find often in the UK. Their droppings are about 5 centimeters long, cylindrical, and generally quite dark. They might be filled with bits of insects and worms. And I will give you a clue to the animal.
A mole.
It's not a mole. It's not a mole, but you're vaguely in the right kind of ballpark.
It's an animal.
It's an animal. It's a mammal. It is a mammal. It's a mammal of
badgers.
It's a mammal of the subfamily Erinaceae.
Hedgehog.
Wow. I'm sorry, Samantha. She's this good. That is indeed a description of a hedgehog's droppings.
Do hedgehogs eat worms?
It turns out they do.
Not brown milk.
That's an excellent fact.
I'm going to give you another one.
Okay.
This animal produces dog-like droppings that are usually pointy at one end and full of fur, feathers, tiny bones, seeds, and berries.
Foxes.
Yes.
Oh.
I mean, the vixen should have got that one, but
Did I come in too early? Was that an illegal answer?
No, okay. That's great. That's great absolutely knowledge. Perfect. Okay, here's another one. Droppings are left in clusters of little round hard balls. They are usually... Yes.
Yeah.
Man,
I've actually got, of all the things, I picked up a brown felt tip pen at the beginning of this recording. So I'm actually drawing some of these descriptions as we go along.
You're drawing them. Is this a like top tip for getting the answer?
Just drawing some rabbit poo.
Love it.
For the listeners, that's a really very accurate drawing of rabbit poo. Shall I give you another one?
Yeah.
I'll give you two more. Okay, the first one. These animals poo in shallow pits called latrines. Their droppings vary from firm and sausage-shaped to softer, slimier, and darker if they've been eating lots of worms. Their
humans.
Droppings have a sweet...
Say humans up until then.
Well, they have a sweet, musky smell. Certainly mine aren't sweet and musky. You have named this animal previously, so just
hedgehogs.
Go scroll back. Balls. No, it was said before.
Badgers.
Yes.
They go in. Oh my god, they dig out the a little trees. Toilet. I yes. knew I loved badgers.
Very clean animals, the badger.
Yeah, very hygienic, that.
Very polite.
Well, and so their poo smells musky.
Sweet and musky.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's like my perfume.
Yeah, go and seek them out.
Badger they poo.
There's an illustration. They do look quite big. I'll just show for the... Oh, actually, you won't be able to see. Can you see how big those are?
Oh, no, wow. Yeah. Really.
That's quite a big dropping. Okay, one more, because you're...
They're big lads,
there.
Though, aren't they, badgers?
Yeah. We've got one more.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going
to
pick
to play for.
Right. Okay. This animal will often leave droppings where they roost, so they can often be found
chickens
stuck to walls or on the ground under holes or trees. Bats.
Oh,
no, isn't it? Yeah.
Jenny, with her scatological knowledge, has
wait,
just
they poo against walls.
Yes,
that's incredible.
It's down the side, doesn't it? You can tell what you can tell when you're in a building where the bats are roosting in the eaves because there's crap all down the walls. And
oh, is that because they're just hanging above the wall? They don't sort of shoot. I'm imagining them shooting their poo at the walls.
Why not?
Like from afar.
Decorating the place. You know, let's make this place look a bit more...
Because that would be a skill, wouldn't it? Shooting your poo against a wall.
I'm going to keep practicing. That's going to be my Britain's Got Talent next series. That's going to be my special skill. I'll tell you what, Samantha, I'm going to give you one more this is just for you to see if you can, equal Jenny's fecal abilities. Fecal attraction, we could call this quiz. I'm just saying, that's an idea. So this animal regurgitates parts of their food that they cannot digest, such as the fur and bones of small animals and birds. These pellets can look like animal droppings, but do not smell and gradually turn grey as they dry out. So basically, they poop from both ends, effectively.
Is this a fox again?
It's not a fox. No. Oh, Jenny's desperate to come in.
Regurgitate.
Who pellets. Knew that you were so knowledgeable? It is owl pellets. Yeah. So if you see an owl pellet, that's poo that didn't make it that way. It's come up the other way.
Yeah.
And my second children's book has loads of owls in it. And I'm sad I didn't include that as a fact for the 8 to 9 year olds because they would
they
have loved
know.
That.
They already know. They're very up on the owl defecation.
So they puke and poo, but the puke looks like a poo. Is that what we're saying?
It's like the dried out bits that they're not going to digest. So the bones and the feathers and stuff, it comes up in a little ball. It's gross.
Wow.
Very clever.
I'm totally Googling owl.
Owl pellets.
Yeah, when we finish.
Well, we are about to finish. And this interview has been fascinating and brilliant in ways that I could never have predicted when we started. So it's been an absolute joy to talk to you. And actually, interesting facts, great suggestions, and I know a lot of the members of the sort of quiz community listen to this, and I think that idea that building accessibility in from the start of a quiz, whether that is a pub quiz or a TV quiz, is so important. I think that's been amazing. So we will be listening to your podcast, Samantha, and we'll be buying your book. When is your book out, and tell us the very long title again, please?
Yes, so Living with Hearing Loss and Deafness, A Guide to Owning It and Loving It, is out on the 27th of April 2023. And it's available to pre-order now.
Woo. Perfect. Well, we will look forward to buying that. And thank you so much for being an amazing guest, Samantha Bay.
Thank you. And thank you for the poo facts.
And we are thrilled to say that we have a listener quiz for this show. So we're going to welcome Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hi.
Is this about animal droppings?
I wish. I mean, it's a huge subject, obviously, isn't it? So, I mean, do we invite people to write in?
No, because they'll send in pictures of their own poo. What happens on the internet. So let's not do that. But Jenny, I'm very impressed with your knowledge of poop. That's
and your drawing.
I've always
as well.
Respected you, but I respect you even more now. So James Ellis has sent us a listener quiz, and is James Ellis going to move us slightly out of the latrine and up to loftier heights?
Well, he's moving everybody out of their comfort zones because this is a sports-based quiz. Oh, okay. Because he specifically has picked up on the fact that you guys have said that, you know, it might not be your strongest subject.
Well, no, Jen is very good at sports, actually. Well, I think yes. It's me who's the weak link here.
You'd really know your local football clubs, don't you, Jen? So I'd say that's a specialist subject of yours. Well, this one kind of covers most of the sporting gambit. So,
I mean, netball we've done. We did netball with Laura Lex, so I feel if netball comes up, I'm pretty confident.
Not in this quiz.
Okay.
I think you guys will do really well. And also there's a couple of clues as well for some of the questions, which obviously might jog things along. So I'll just get straight into it. Question number one. Which former sports star once set a world land speed record for the vintage gas coupe?
Gas coupe?
Mm. Is that how am I pronouncing that right? Is it gas coupe?
No idea. Can you repeat the question, please, Amanda? Yeah.
I'd love to repeat the question just so I can say gas coupe. It is, which former sports star once set a world land speed record for the vintage gas coupe? And apologies if I am saying that.
So I feel like it's going to be someone who is not famous for driving.
Yeah. So someone who's a speed enthusiast, sporting legend.
Is it going to be someone like, I'm going to say Vinnie Jones. Because it feels like the kind of, you know, daring do that he might engage in.
There's a little clue here as well.
Yeah,
so
please.
I don't know how much of a clue this is going to be, though. They were the subject of a very successful biopic. So it was a really famous film.
Well, is it one of those like, one of the sports car drivers, Ayrton Senna. Ayrton Senna, there is a...
No, I think
is it a driver?
No, it's not somebody
someone from a different
for driving.
Sport.
Yeah,
Muhammad Ali.
No, good guess though.
Oh. That's someone with a very successful biopic.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I would say
Eddie the Eagle.
Oh,
I'd love it. If it was Eddie the Eagle. Who else have we had? Muhammad Ali, Eddie the Eagle. Oh my goodness!
This person, there was something very notorious that happened, and they were actually drummed out of the sport. Ooh. And now, as a result, they were banned for life from this particular sport.
Is it Tonya Harding?
It is Tonya Harding.
That's a great question.
You said person.
Yes, that's brilliant.
Non-gendered approach. Oh, Tonya Harding then went on to do driving.
I'm not sure when this record was set. I think it was when she was still ice skating, or maybe even before. But it's actually really sad because she's a pro boxer now.
Wow.
Her dad was like a mechanic or a drag racer or something, wasn't he? So I think probably some connection there. Amazing. That's a great question. How interesting.
Okay, well, moving on to question number two. What was first achieved by Diane Leather in 1954?
Oh, I do know that name.
Diane Leather in a sporting capacity.
Oh, gosh.
Can I give the clue?
Yes, because it really rings a bell, actually.
It might jog you on. It came 23
days.
Jog
you on a clue?
Ooh.
It wasn't. It was... Oh. it came 23 days after a similar but more famous achievement.
With Roger Bannister's the mile record.
So I inadvertently gave
that's why you've heard of it, yeah.
A separate
I had a feeling it was athletics based. So yeah, we were getting the right way.
So she was the first woman to run a mile in under 5 minutes. So that was at 4:59. And that's 23 days after Roger Bannister became the first man to break the 4 minute mile barrier. Wow. 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Wow. There was something in the water at that time.
Yeah.
Wasn't there? Everybody suddenly sped up.
Okay. Football related question for number three. Which 3 days of the year have the most English Football League games taken place on?
Oh, is it now?
It's gonna be Boxing Day.
Yes, this is exactly what I was going to say, because Christmas is always blighted for me by excess of football. So, yeah, I mean...
Day and New Year's Day is usually... Because if it's a bank holiday, But Boxing Day is traditionally the one that's absolutely rammed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Boxing Day, yes, at over 3,700. New Year's Day, yes, at 1,800 or more.
Oh wow!
And there's another one as well. There's the last one, which really surprised me. But apparently, it was a thing once.
Oh, interesting. So something like, you know, St. George's Day or
May Day or something.
No, I mean, I can't think. Is it in the same period? Is it sort of in the...
Yes.
I mean, obviously, it's going to be winter, isn't it? So it's not Christmas Day. It's not...
Valentine's Day.
Isn't it Christmas Day?
Is it Christmas Day?
It's apparently Christmas Day with 1,200 or more games. Yeah, it used to be kind of a traditional...
It's a day off, isn't it?
Yeah,
give the people something to watch.
A day off and something to do.
Yeah.
Especially in Victorian times, apparently, because obviously it was the only time workers had the day off. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay, great. That's such a good question.
That's a good one.
The lovely thing about that question is you sort of intuitively, you just know, don't you? You just know it's sort of that time of year. Yeah. And
I always thought being a footballer must be really boring on Christmas.
You can't enjoy your turkey, can you?
Yeah.
They probably don't know anything about the Only Fools and Horses Christmas specials or Mrs. Brown's Boys. Imagine if you're a huge Mrs. Brown's Boys fan, but you also play for Man City. That's a dilemma that you have to wrestle with.
Okay, question number four. What links three of the four winners of the demonstration curling event at the 1932 Winter Olympics?
They were dead.
They were Scottish.
I mean, Scottish would seem fairly... They were women? Over 65.
The clue is the fourth member of the team, Robert Powell, later served as the mayor of a city in Canada.
Question again, please.
What links three of the four winners of the demonstration curling event at the 1932 Winter Olympics?
1932, so they were all war veterans.
Shall I give the answer?
Why would that be a clue? That's just mad.
Yeah.
Okay, well, they, William Burns, Eric Willis and James Bowman, were serving MPs for the Canadian Conservative Party.
Oh, wow, that is fun.
Okay, question number five. Which country produced the world's first $7 banknote?
It's a sporting question.
Yeah.
It is.
In the number seven.
And there's no clue here either.
Number seven.
Okay, so number seven, who's a famous number seven, Jen? That's what we need to work out, isn't it? Was David Beckham not number seven? Was it the UK?
USA, there's been a couple of famous players who sported the number seven, I think. USA, but maybe not. Maybe it's a rugby thing? Is it rugby?
Rugby sevens. Is rugby sevens not a thing?
Will it be New Zealand for like Jonah Lomu or something like that? I'm getting nothing from Amanda's face, which is where I go for all my clues.
Is it to do with rugby sevens, do we think?
It is, yeah.
Okay.
Not rugby sevens, that would be rugby union, I would say. Rugby union. No?
Who plays rugby? I don't know, like Tuvalu or...
Papua New Guinea for winning the first ever rugby sevens Olympic medal or whatever.
Hawaii, I'm just trying to name. I mean, I'm so useless. Fiji.
Ding, 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 ding. Fiji, after they won the rugby sevens at the 2016 Olympics.
Hey. Oh, well.
Here we go. Oh, very good.
There is a logic there. We followed the trail.
Yeah.
And we ended up slightly randomly.
Lovely sport questions that we did have a go at.
And do you know what? This is, again, that you know, what we've illustrated there is if you think you don't know a subject, just talk about it long enough and something will come up that will give you a clue.
Teamwork to make the dream work.
And it helps if you've got Amanda, obviously. That's the main help is if Amanda is giving you clues along the way. But that was such a great quiz. And it was sporting, but I actually enjoyed it. So that's a great testament to James Ellis's question setting skills.
Very good work, James.
Yeah, so thank you very much. And if you have a listener quiz, why not get in touch with us? Send it in. You can get in touch with us on Twitter at FingersBuzzers.
Yeah, and we've got an email address, which is fingersbuzzers@gmail.com.
Oh, well done. There you go. That's a feat of memory. This is why you're the great quizzer that you are, because you remember the email address. Thank you so much to James Ellison. Thank you, Amanda, once again for your brilliant question hosting. Thank you. what a fascinating, enlightening and generally enjoyable chat with the brilliant Samantha Baines and a wonderful listener quiz from James Ellis. Goodness me, Jen, a lot happened there.
Yeah, that was intense. I think I need to go and lie down with a flannel on my head for a bit. but then I'm going to go straight to Instagram for some quizzing, because there's a whole culture there that is to be uncovered. I'm really looking forward to getting in some additional quiz.
Every week we find another dimension to quiz, and it pleases my heart no end. So thank you so much to our gorgeous producer, Amanda. Yay. Thank you to all of you for listening, and please join us next time for another
Fingers on Buzzers.
It's like a creaky door opening.
Fingers on Buzzers starred Lucy Porter and Jenny Ryan and was produced by Amanda Redman, with music by Kevin MacLeod and Justin Edwards. Email quiz at fingersonbuzzers.com and tweet at fingersbuzzers. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join us next time for more Fingers on Buzzers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.